Our second reading is one that is perhaps quite familiar to us, but we're going to read it, and I invite us to hear it again, perhaps with fresh ears. Let us hear again these important words from Jesus. They are from Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. Let us hear what the Spirit is saying to the church this morning. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This is holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God. Will you join me now in prayer? O Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when we sit, when we stand. You know us. You know our struggles. Speak to us, O God, now, in those places where we need to be spoken to. Open us up to your word, and may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable to you. Amen. This week I went to Greaterford Prison to attend a workshop on restorative justice. This workshop was led by a group of men who are currently incarcerated. These men had been through weeks of training on the subject of restorative justice. And in an icebreaker exercise that they led us through, we talked to each person in the room in 2-minute intervals, responding to questions like, "What would you do if you won the lottery?" or "What's most important to you in your life right now?" By the end of those first 20 minutes, through these structured conversations, every person on the outside or coming from the outside had an opportunity to look into the eyes of someone on the inside and find connection with them, and vice versa. We found sometimes surprising connections. We learned that we have shared interests, that we have shared needs, that we have shared longings, and even sometimes shared visions for how we'd like the world to be, how we'd like the world to operate. At one point, I looked up in this room and I saw on the wall, on a laminated big piece of paper, it said, "The principles of restorative justice." And the first principle was, we are all connected to each other. We are all connected to each other. I realized that this first exercise was all about helping us to experience that connection to one another. That it was important that we not just talk about that we're connected to each other, but that we experience it in that room. And that experiencing our connectivity, that is where the real work of justice begins. Justice that is based on restoring relationship. Justice work that focuses on harms done and the potential for healing, justice that focuses on the actual needs of people within relationships. This is what restorative justice is all about. So many of the systems in this world, and specifically in this case, the prison system, is set up to teach people that we are not connected to each other. A dividing wall, literally a concrete wall, separates the, quote, bad people from the good people. Within this prison, people are placed in concrete cells that function to remind them that they are being punished. Disconnection and separation is punishment. Solitary confinement is a form of punishment, is ultimately about disconnection. What we were doing that day within the walls of this prison, being led into an experience of connecting with one another, this was an example of building a new world within the shell of the old. This is a phrase that Peter Morin used, the co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. He would say this, that in the shell of this old world, we can build a new world. A world of concrete walls and prison cells, a group of people are building a new world. These imprisoned men were teaching us on the outside a vision of a different world that is possible. And it all started with this very simple exercise whereby we could experience ourselves as connected to each other, despite all the ways that the world wants to teach us otherwise. Sometimes we can have this experience of interconnectedness with people who have died. People who are no longer physically present, we can experience their presence, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. Wrestling with past demons of our ancestors is very real. That's why I think racism is so real today, because past demons become present demons. Intergenerational trauma is a real thing. But we can also experience the spiritual presence of those who have died as a gratuitous gift, the love and compassion that we've learned and inherited from those who have gone before us is also real. We are connected in these mysterious ways to those who are no longer present in this world. I know that I've become more and more interested in my family history, in part because I know that there is something always of history that lives inside of me, the good and the bad. And that being aware of this interconnectedness, all of it, is part of my own journey toward healing and wholeness. Every year, I feel more appreciative of the church's tradition of celebrating the Feast of All Saints. This is a feast day in the life of the church, which means it's a festival, a celebration, and we ask, what are we celebrating? The answer really is we are celebrating interconnectedness. We are celebrating this mystical body of Christ, the mystery of our interdependence with one another. And what is so powerful about this day is that it is this amazing truth about our lives, that we are never walking alone. There are always companions, witnesses, who go before us and walk with us. Now, in the tradition of the church, saints is a title given to anyone who is on the way of Jesus or who has been on the way of Jesus, and that includes all of us in this room. So you and I are called the saints of God, just like we are called children of God. And yet there is also always a way in which we are becoming saints. Just like we are always becoming children of God, we are learning to become children of God because we have not arrived. We are on the way of Jesus. There's a reason why it's called a way. It's a journey of living more fully into our identity as children of God, as saints of God. The Beatitudes are read every year on All Saints. I was greatly helped this week by a new understanding of the word blessed. Now, we perhaps know that Jesus spoke Aramaic, and he probably used the Aramaic word for blessed when he taught the Beatitudes. The Aramaic word for blessed means ripe or ready for picking. So it's an agricultural term which the disciples would have understood. It's an agrarian culture. They knew that when what it looked like when a piece of fruit was ripe, it was ready to be picked. So think about that word in reference to a human being. People, when they're ripe or ready to be picked. It's a little odd, perhaps, but it seems closer to our word integrated or whole or mature, complete, perhaps. Seems to be a fitting word for how we would understand blessed. And I would encourage you to spend some time meditating on the Beatitudes, thinking about substituting the word mature, for example, or ripe for blessed, and see how that refreshes the translation. Blessed, ripe, mature are you when you stay close to suffering in the world and grieve. Blessed, ripe, mature are you when you hunger and thirst for justice. Ripe, mature are you when you practice mercy, when you are gentle, pure in heart. Jesus is laying out the conditions of our becoming whole or mature according to the reign of God, not according to empire, but according to the reign of God. These are the conditions, these are the markers on the way to becoming children of God. You are already a child of God, but you are also becoming a child of God. The Beatitudes are the Magna Carta for disciples of Jesus. They are like the disciples' primary constitution. It's not surprising that when we remember the Beatitudes on this day, that these Beatitudes show us the characteristics of the saints, which includes, by the way, the very last Beatitude, which points out that it doesn't always fare too well for the disciples of this Jesus. In fact, often it means that they struggle because their commitments go against the grain of the status quo. The practice of mercy, the practice of gentleness and kindness, making peace, those who are not willing to leave places of suffering but stay close to it and sensitive to it, these qualities of becoming mature or complete according to Jesus are going to mess with the world. They are going to mess with the prison system. They are going to mess with every system where the aim is disconnection and dehumanization. And so the final Beatitude reminds us of this, that your conflict with the world may very well be a sign that you are living more fully into your identity as a child of God, a saint of God. This is why when you tell stories of saints, they are people who had a deep struggle against the status quo, who at their core were protesters of the systems of domination that are always a part of empire's ways. Whether we talk about Joseph or Mary, the mother of Jesus, or saints, people like Martin Luther, who just last week we celebrated the 500 years of the anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, protest and Reformation. We often forget that word protest is there in this tradition, that when Martin Luther nailed those 95 theses on a door, that was an act of protest. Dr. King, Dorothy Day, Ella Baker, Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells, any of the saints that we remember. When we remember these saints, we must not forget that they were not often considered saints when they were alive. When they were alive, they tended to be called agitators or troublemakers. And this, Jesus says, is often what happens with the prophets. For in the same way, Jesus said, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Saints are never at ease with the status quo. They are usually at work trying to build a new world within the shell of the old. So on this All Saints Sunday, we celebrate the mystery of our interconnectedness. Interconnectedness is at the heart of the Christian faith. Think about the mystery of the Trinity. It's all about interconnectedness, or the incarnation, or the communion of saints, the communion we celebrate at the Lord's table. At the heart of all of this is interdependence and connection. And so much of our work in our world today, I believe, is about restoring what has been disconnected, restoring our disconnection from one another, our disconnection from the earth, from our own humanity, breaking down walls of segregation and division, because that is who God is. And it is what the saints have testified to who God is. The men in the prison showed me that the mystery and beauty of connectedness can happen in the most surprising places, building a new world within the shell of the old, building community in the hostile places like a prison. They showed me that this is possible. We are, all of us, among the builders of new worlds right here within the shell of the old world. We are, right now, part of the communion of saints. We do not walk alone, and we do not build alone. Don't forget what God has called you, that you are a child of God, a saint of God, but you have not arrived yet. You are becoming a child of God. You are becoming a saint of God.